The first thing to say is that I'm from Bristol, which, if you remember Insider from Rosie, is considered to be the end of the earth. They go on this marvellous charabanc ride, and they go to Bristol and even beyond, to Weston-super-Mare. So forgive me for my Bristolness. The other thing to say is that I'm a bird watcher, and the first time I connected with Laurie, having read his books, was travelling north from Bristol to that place called Birdlip. You know, a bird watcher can't really see a place name on a map or on a sign called Birdlip and not want to go there. And you, as you'll know, it's right next door to Slad. And Birdlip is the place where you now rise up off the whatever that road is, the M5, I guess, towards the hillside. And it's a cloud manufactory up there. Clouds seem to be sort of bred from the woodland that hangs along the scarp edge there. It's great for birds, Birdlip being, you know, what you're going to listen for. Slad, likewise, there's lots of bird song there. The kind of lip of birds is where I want to, what I want to talk about in a way, and what I want to talk about particularly in Cider with Rosie. So I've got sort of four observations to make and one little story about that, and it's to do with Birdlip, if you'll forgive that expression. It's about what I detect in his work, particularly in that book, but in the other things I know of his as well, which is this sort of particular Slant Valley inflected deliquescence, if you like, the way in which things blur into one another in his writing, fabulously so. There are four things that seem to me that go on in Cider with Rosie, which seem to exemplify that. And by deliquescence, I mean the way in which he's a habitual border crosser. He can't see a border without wanting to reach across it, without wanting to make that border porous, without wanting to write himself through an experience, either into a place or into the feelings of other people. So these four things, what are they? Well, it's the first opening of Cider with Rosie is a wonderful account. It's a sort of sensorium, if that's a word. It's about being an infant. It's how an infant experiences the world. It's entirely, you remember the first page, he's drowning in grass. He's set down and the grass is taller than him. And that creates the spirit for me of that book right away, this sense of being overwhelmed by something, of being immersed in something. And so the infant Laurie, the way a child looks at the world seems to me incredibly important as the way, as a driver for his prose. It's a fantastic, I'm a nature writer, so-called, if such a thing as a nature writer exists. But it's, to me, exactly the quality of the best nature writing is what you're seeing right from the very beginning of Cider with Rosie. This wonderful sense of approaching, as I say, a border, getting to the place which might be the where we stop as human beings and the rest of the world begins, whether that's a field of grass, a field of cows, other people, the weather, those cloud-making trees that you see all along the scarp edge there at Birdlip. So the infant's view, which he manages to wonderfully hold on to and write about. So it's that sense of the absolute innocence of perspective, but nonetheless the total immersiveness of the experience. The second thing is this fascinating sense, and I don't know, his biographers will know this much better than me, this uncertainty about quite who he is and where he comes from. The border crossings that his mother represents to him, it seems to me, in Cider with Rosie. Do we really know what her social class was? It's wonderfully ambiguous. You know, she's a sort of player across the social field in Gloucestershire. And you don't really know whether she works upwards or downwards. She seems to work in all directions. So again, I see that as a kind of wonderfully rich border crossing freedom that it's given him, this sense of this woman. She's not a farm worker. They weren't farm workers. They're not the gentry. They go to visit and sing carols to the gentry. But she and through her family play upstairs and downstairs, if you like. And I think that's, you know, that's another rich border crossing for me. The third thing is that wonderful chapter in the book called The Sick Boy, I think, where he gets ill. And in his fever, It's as if the fever allows him an adventure in prose. Fantastic writing about what happens to a mind when it's overheated. And the prose is beautifully connected to that, I think. So it's a diary of a sick boy, but it's done like a poem. And again, that to me is a kind of fabulous piece of nature writing. It's about the human body and the kind of adventures it goes on when it's heated to more than 100 degrees. The last one, I guess, and in a way the most substantial one of all, is the landscape of the valley itself. And this picks up on something I've said about that cloud factory that I think of, that woodland line there that you hear him writing about all the time. He's amazingly good on mists, on dew, on the wateriness of the landscape, on its insubstantiality. It's priceless writing. It's as good as any so-called nature writer has ever been able to achieve. Fantastic stuff. There's a wonderful place nearby called Ouselworth Bottom. I mean, what could be nicer than that? Ouselworth Bottom, let's say it again. It happens to be the first place I saw a ring ousel, ring ousel in Ouselworth Bottom. Charles Tomlinson, the lovely poet, still lives nearby. That's what that bit of the landscape means to me. It oozes. I mean, you've got this fantastically hard, bony, chalky Cotswold hill scenario, but you've also got water running through that landscape all the time, which he was incredibly alive to. We just heard from Patrick that poem, absolutely about a border crossing between wet feet and dry feet, between a boat and the shore and things like that. I think he's amazingly alive to that. The first page of the second book, As I Walked Out, describes him as a man. He talks of himself as soft at the edges. And that's exactly right. And that's what I'm being tried to talk about in a way. That's what I think he was, and that's what he was as a writer. A kind of porous man, a man who allowed the stuff of life to flow into him, and which you managed magically to capture and give back in prose, without it sounding, never to me, at least inside with Rosie, I'm not so sure about the poems, but we can come to that later, without it ever sounding overdone.